Hello, one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I am your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be going a little off topic. We're not going to focus on anything related to newer movies coming out. Instead, we're going to take a look back and celebrate one of the finest talents that we ever had graced our eyes and our screens. Academy Award winner, the late and great Robin Williams. Robin Williams, what can you say about him that hasn't been said already? A truly gifted actor, a hilarious comedian, and a genuinely down-to-earth human being. You think back on some of the great comics, some of the great actors that we have ever received, and Robin Williams, hands down, is one of those guys. He always gave it his all. He was such a joy to watch on screen, regardless if the movie that he was in was good or bad, regardless if he played someone that was good or if he played someone that was really bad. The guy had it all. He had all these incredible chops and had so much range to him as a performer, and I miss him so dearly. He was a performer that I cherished a lot growing up, and I still cherish to this day as I get older and everything. But we're not going to dwell on the sadness. We're going to focus on the good. We're going to celebrate the work of Robin Williams today. And I'm very excited to be doing that with our guests. Our guest today is Beth Ann Tarpley. Beth Ann, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you on. I cannot wait to delve into the career of Robin Williams with you today. But before we get into talking about Robin Williams, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk a little bit about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
Yeah. So, like you said, my name is Beth Ann Tarpley. I do a couple podcasts. I also work with some of the other podcasts I'm guests on, like 24 Minutes at A24 and the Movie Draft podcast. Those are my homies. But yeah, I have really, it's been an interesting transition for movies for me because I started out podcasting with music history and then I started getting back into the movie podcast world, and it's been so good to be on this side of like Twitter, so to speak, right? Because all of our podcast friends are on Twitter. Because it's just nice to have that excitement and, you know, not to... I'm so sorry. My husband is texting me to say I need to plug his letterbox. So go do that, I guess. But my husband is now currently... Sorry, not to... do a very harsh transition. He currently is ranking every single movie he's ever seen on Letterboxd. He has a spreadsheet, a Google spreadsheet. He is going strong at it. So anyway, back to me. it's really good to just be on the side of it because in a very positive space, oddly to say that for Twitter, and just really catch the excitement. And what I love about movies, for me, it's a lot about the stories that get to me, about good writing. And I think movies are the perfect medium to get messages, like a wholehearted approach to getting messages through. Because it's not just a well-written script. It's how it's presented. It's how, you know, the cinematographer lights it to kind of communicate this is a happy moment or this is a sad moment or this is a really bright moment. It's about the director behind the screen making sure that it matches the vision of the screenwriter. And all of this culminates together to make this really cool art project. It's about the music, too. I love soundtracks so much. And how a, you know, I don't know why I can't think of the word, but anyway, a composer can come in and just grab the emotion and take it even further. And for me, that's what movies are about. It's a way to hit it and get the whole medium approach to bringing out good messages, complex messages, whatever needs to be said. And I just think it's a beautiful thing.
I agree with you on all of that 100%. And, you know, talking about something else that's just so lovely and beautiful, our topic today of Robin Williams. Like I said at the top, you know, we lost him a few years ago, and it's crazy. And we were talking about this right before we started recording. It's been 10 years since we lost him, which is absolutely insane. I mean, time goes so quickly, it's hard to even comprehend that it's been a decade since we found out the news of Robin Williams passing away. So I would just love to pose these couple of questions to you. Why do you think a lot of people loved Robin Williams so much? Why do you think a lot of people always got excited to see him on screen, regardless of the project that he's in, regardless of how big or small his roles are? And what makes you such a fan of Robin Williams?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I mean, for me, Robin Williams is the people's comedian. He's one of those comedians that can approach anyone on any topic and still communicate to them and make them feel like they're a part of the joke, so to speak. And I think that's why Robin Williams is so successful. He has a very wide range. It wasn't just like slapstick comedy or, you know, kind of on the kid side movies. He also did these really serious dramas and still found a way to bring in a little bit of his humor, a little bit of his mannerisms. I mean, for me, why I love Robin Williams, you know, it's interesting because I remember him passing. We were talking about it. I was on an airplane and it just, his death hits me. And it's like when those things happen, when they're taken from you too soon, then you go back and look. And it was on that retrospective perspective where I was like, holy crap, man, I wish he was here to savor more of what he did, you know, so get more of what he did. And all we have left is his work. And for me, Robin Williams, I think it was both the on-screen and off-screen, knowing a lot about his off-screen life and how much of a good person he was and, you know, protected people, so to speak. If you look at, like, a little bit about The Birdcage, which I'm sure one of us will talk about at some point, you know, he protected Nathan Lane when Oprah Winfrey accidentally tried to out him and didn't realize she was doing that, and he found a way to divert that. He didn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, he always would go to people's relatives, you know, when he was hanging out with other actors and they're at like this little picnic, and he'd just purposely go seek people he didn't know and make friends with them. Like, he was a well-rounded person and he knew that he was more than the screen. And I think people like that make the biggest impact.
Yeah, I agree there. There was something very special. There is something very special about Robin Williams and why so many people loved him and idolized him and looked up to him so much. I mean, like I said, he was an incredible actor, and I love how you bring up how, of course, he was primarily known for his comedies and making us laugh and, you know, doing some of these raunchier comedies, some of these family-esque comedies, but he was also an incredibly gifted dramatic actor as well. And I always have appreciated whenever I would see a comedian step out of their comfort zone and tackle a more serious role. It's one of my favorite things to see on screen. A great example of a really gifted comedic actor turned dramatic actor. You have Jim Carrey, you got Adam Sandler, you just got, just to name a few. But I think Robin was the best one of the bunch. Mm-hmm. I think that his range was just unlike any other actor that we had ever had. And it's so crazy too that say you do watch one of his more straight up serious films, and then you watch something like A Birdcage or a Mrs. Doubtfire or something that is very different from that. It focused more so on the comedy. You would not think that that's the same actor that you saw in a film like Dead Poets Society or a film like Insomnia or especially a film like Good Will Hunting, where he won an Academy Award for. It's really cool to say that Robin Williams was an Academy Award winning actor. I think that's such an awesome thing. Mm-hmm. And I always think about how if you were alive when Robin Williams came onto the scene, when he guest starred on Happy Days back in the 70s, and then, of course, got his own series and Mork and Mindy spun off from that, and then you just watched him evolve as a performer to then being in Oscar caliber material to then winning an Oscar for himself. It's just so insane that, you know, we live in a time where in 2024 we're not able to see what he would have brought to his career now at this point in time. But I'm really gracious that we got all the work that we got from him. He was a very versatile talent. It was so heartbreaking when we lost him, and I'll never forget where I was. I'll never forget who told me about his passing. I remember it like it was yesterday. That's why, to me, it's still shocking that it was 10 years ago and everything. And I said this to you in terms of celebrity passings in my lifetime, not that it's a competition or anything. Robin's passing easily is the one that impacted me the most. One, it came out of nowhere. Two, he was, you know, he was 63. That's obviously not super young, but it's also not old either. And then just hearing about what had happened and everything made it all the more heartbreaking. And knowing that he had a lot of struggles in his personal life, even though he was so loved by so many people from all over the world, it made it even more heartbroken when we realized that he was no longer with us. And again, I'm excited that we're doing this episode today. One, I've always wanted to do a Robin Williams episode on this podcast, but also I'm excited to be talking about these films. Some of these films I haven't gotten the chance to talk about on this podcast, and I'm really excited to celebrate the work that he brought to screen. I grew up loving him, and I was hoping that he would still be around to where I could watch him make content when I'm, you know, an adult and everything. And yeah, I love the guy, and I'm so excited to be delving into his career today. I have no idea where these lists are going to go. I mean, obviously, I know my list, but I don't know what your list is going to be. So I'm very curious to see how it pans out. I'm curious to see if we're going to have any overlaps. This could be a scenario to where we don't, but I would be shocked if we don't at least have one film in common. I feel like we're definitely going to. Okay. So let's transition into our list. So, Beth Ann, what is your number five favorite Robin Williams film of all time?
So I felt like pulling a Terminal. And if you've watched, was that 24 or were we on the movie draft for that? That was 24. I felt like pulling a Terminal here and saying Flubber, because I'm just so partial to that movie as a child that I loved that film so much. I don't know what it was about that film. But just the idea of this little blob that danced and moved around just spoke to me. But I'm not going to do that, because I said, you know, sit down, think about it. Is it a Robin Williams film, or is it a film about a green slime blob? And I parted with, it is a film about a green slime blob. So it did not make it the list. But I have at number five, Hook, which I'm sure is a little bit of a controversial choice as well. But I think it definitely fits there, because I think Hook is, for me, it's such a timeless classic. Like, for I don't know why, I always used to play around Thanksgiving time growing up, and I remember watching Hook while we're all at the kids' table. And it's just so cemented, like, as this great moment for, if only Robin Williams could do that role, right? He's the only person, I think, that fully personifies and embodies a kid who tries to grow up but can't, right? And it fits him so well. And he brings so much of that energy of reminding us, like, hey, you can both feel like you're still a kid and also growing up, you can still be a grown up, like you could be both. And I just think that's so cool.
So Hook is not on my list. I do have a bit of a hot take. I do not hate Hook. I don't hate Hook. I know that it's a cool thing to hate on Hook, which it's, first of all, it's far from Spielberg's worst film. I just want to say that right now. It's not Spielberg's worst. It's not one of his best either, in my opinion. But I agree with how, if you're going to cast someone to play an adult version of Peter Pan, I don't think you could have cast anyone better than Robin Williams. I think he was the perfect person to play this character and everything, because, you know, he left Neverland, he grew up and everything, and he's trying so hard to grow up, but then you see this side of him that realizes that, like you said, it's okay to grow up, but it's also okay to still have pieces of your youth in there, like the child sense and awe and everything. And I love him in this film so much. It's so funny, because I don't even think he's like the MVP of this movie. Dustin Hoffman as Hook is like sublime cast, and it's honestly one of my favorite performances of Dustin Hoffman's career. He's fantastic in this, and I just think the idea of Spielberg and Robin Williams working together was a match made in heaven. I'm bummed that they never got to collaborate together again. I would have loved to have seen another Spielberg Robin Williams collaboration. It would have been really cool to see what he would have done. Especially maybe he could have done like a straight up drama. Yeah. I was just about to say that. Yeah, if he did something along the lines of like Bridge of Spies and The Post.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine Robin Williams in a communist story with Steven Spielberg? Like, sign me up, man. When I get up to wherever Robin Williams is, I'm gonna specifically request that. Let's go ahead and make this film. Like, Steven Spielberg's there. Like, I'm like, you got nothing to do. You got a whole eternity. Make this film for me, please.
Let's throw in Tom Hanks in there. Let's get Tom Hanks in there.
Yo.
The whole trifecta.
Man. Like, and then let's just add Mark Rylance, because I think Mark Rylance became a steady Steven Spielberg guy.
That's totally fine by me. Man. He does. Yeah, no, that would be like a perfect trifecta of actors under the helm of someone like Spielberg.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hook is a great pick. It's very, very good. And I know that if you're someone that grew up in the 90s, that's such a staple to 90s cinema and everything. But in terms of 90s Robin Williams comedies, that is not the one that's on my list. And we'll talk about the other popular 90s Robin Williams comedy very shortly. It's not Flubber, so don't worry. It's not Flubber.
Oh, what a shame, man. You missed an opportunity.
I know. So number five for me, I am going to go with one of his more serious performances. I'm going to go with the performance that, to me, terrifies me the most of his catalog, and that is 1 Hour Photo. That, to me, is... it's honestly in contention for best performance of his entire career, because this is very much outside of what we would see from Robin Williams. Now, at this point in his career, he had already won his Oscar. He had already done a handful of dramas at this point. But this was a very different side of him that we were not used to seeing. Robin Williams in real life was a pretty outgoing guy. Even though he was battling certain things in his life, he was still a very outgoing person. So to see him play a very introverted, shy, incredibly broken guy, that caught me off guard tremendously. First of all, the bleached hair freaked me out. Second, he shaved all the hair off his arms. Now, one thing to point out about Robin Williams is that his arms were the hairiest arms I think I've ever seen in my life on screen.
Hairy man.
Like, truly hairy man. I remember when I saw Hook for the first time, I'm like, God, this guy has so much fucking hair. What the fuck? but in this movie, he plays a photo clerk, and this is also a very 2002 movie, because obviously, you know, nobody develops film anymore like the way they used to 20 years ago. So this definitely feels like a product of the time, but it's also a very incredibly helmed thriller, to where Robin Williams's character, Cy, he had been developing photos of this family for a very long time, even prior to this family's birth of their child. So like, years and years and years, and he has a little bit of an obsession with this family, one that you really start to question. You're like, what, why does this guy care so much about this family? And then you learn a little bit more about the character as the film progresses, and it's a very sad story. It's a very heartbreaking film, but it's also incredibly terrifying to watch. You're on the edge of your seat the whole time, especially that third act when things really go down. Regarding, without spoiling anything, regarding the husband of the family, when now that stuff comes into play, the entire movie is an adrenaline-induced roller coaster from start to finish, and you never would have expected Robin Williams to be in a movie like this. And there's also one terrifying jump scare in this movie. I hate jump scares with every fiber of my being. I think they're overused, I think they're stale, and they fail to land an impact. One jump scare in this movie involving a certain shot of eyes and blood.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the most haunting shots. One of the most haunting shots I've ever seen. It's so great. And this is a fantastic performance from him. I love the turn that he brought here. And I also found it cool how also in 2002, he did another movie where he played the character of Sai. He's a guy who means well, but he's going through a lot of psychotic. It's not on my list either. Insomnia. The fact that those two movies came out the same year and showed this different side of Robin Williams that we hadn't seen. He played this psychologically tormented guy, and then he played a freaking serial killer.
Yeah.
The range right there. The serious range right there.
2002 was his villain era, man. He just said, why not do horror? Why not do... I mean, that's kind of what it is. It teeters on that thriller-horror line.
It does. No, you're totally fine. And also, why not work with Christopher Nolan? So, you know, the fact that he got to work with Nolan is just insane to me. But yeah, 1 hour photo is my number 5. I'm going to assume this is not on your list, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on 1 hour photo.
You know, I'm glad you brought it up. It has been such a long time since I've seen it. Like, and I saw it like age 13. Okay. So that was like, and I watched it because my brother had it in the background, of course. And I probably shouldn't have been watching it, but yeah, I remember with that film, like it was this side of Robin Williams that, you know, he hadn't done a role like this before. And that's one of the reasons I like him, is because he always, I feel like, challenged himself to do different things. And yeah, when I think about Insomnia and I think about 1 hour photo, kind of similar roles there, just for him to have that kind of creepy aspect, right? That almost uneasiness. That's actually very hard to do. I feel like I've never acted like it, but I feel like that's really hard to do with film. And for him to come from this comedy side of things into this drama, into this horror thriller element, I don't know. I think it's the coolest thing. I think it's the coolest history to have that kind of range.
Yeah, it's really incredible how you could go through Robin's filmography and then just watch all these comedies and everything, and then a handful of these dramas, and then you come across these two films and you just see the side of him that you're like, wow, I really wish we got to see him do more of this. But the fact that he got the opportunity to do this, these two movies in the same year, let alone, that's insane to me. That's just so incredible. It just showed how much range he has. So now transition to a number 4s. What is your pick for number 4?
My pick for number 4, and this may be a little bit of an overlap, I have Mrs. Doubtfire. And I'm kind of surprised it's not higher on my list. This is just, if you look in the dictionary and you type in Robin Williams, I feel like this is the movie that comes up. Or going to be this or Aladdin are going to come up. It's hard not to talk about things, other films with Robin Williams. But for Mrs. Doubtfire, I mean, it's just a classic, you know, him. It just has a heart to it of a dad losing his kids in a custody battle and being able to try to see them more and the lengths he's willing to go. It was also, I feel like, a quintessential moment in culture in a weird way, because it's like, it was pretty amazing, you know, despite all of what we're seeing right now, culture-wise, against transgender people and drag and things like that, you know, him taking on that persona, it was so well accepted. And it goes back to when Robin Williams did things, people were like, oh, okay. Like, it's just, he had that ability to bring everyone to the table and be fine. But yeah, I think about that role a lot with him, you know, kind of like a Tootsie kind of thing with like Dustin Hoffman and him taking on this role. And it was so much life to it. And there's such a heartbeat to the film. And it's just funny. It's like the most best scene in the world of him putting his face in the pie and being like, oh, hello. You know, it was just such like one of the best scenes ever in cinema. But yeah, that's what I have on Mrs. Doubtfire. What about you?
This is a pass for me. It's a little higher on my list. I cannot wait to talk about it. This was the 90s comedy that I was hinting at earlier. And speaking of 90s movies, this definitely is also on your list. This is definitely the film that I would be so shocked if it's not on your list. either you haven't seen this film or you just don't like it. And if you don't like it, then what's the matter with you? And if you haven't seen it at this point, then what the hell is wrong with you? My number four is Aladdin. You can't do a Robin Williams top five without putting Aladdin on the list. That's just not possible. It's just, look, if anyone out there really has a reason why this isn't in their top five Robin Williams films, I'd be really curious to hear why that's the case. But to talk about why it's in my top five list, of course, I mean, growing up in a household where Disney was constantly played on loop and everything, all these Disney movies and what have you, while Aladdin is not my favorite Disney animated film, especially from the 90s, it is up there in the top three. I really think that this was the period where Disney was pumping out their best work when it came to animation. I mean, the fact that they had the streak of Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, this, and The Lion King back to back. I mean, to me, those are four masterpieces. Those are four of the best anime films ever made. I mean, The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast in particular are in my top 50 films of all time. Those are two very near and dear films to me. And they're also films that somehow have stuck with me so much as an adult. You know how whenever you watch movies when you're a kid and you're like, oh, this is so great and everything. Then when you get older, you realize, oh, this isn't as good as I remember it being. But somehow movies like Aladdin still find a way of working even as an adult, because you realize that it's a very universal theme. It's a very universal story to where there's something for everybody to enjoy. There's kids, there's stuff for the kids to enjoy. There's stuff for the teens to enjoy. And there's stuff for the adults to enjoy, so that when they take their kids to watch these movies or they show their kids these movies, they don't feel like they're wasting their time. They don't feel like it's a chore to sit through a movie like Aladdin. Aladdin is so charming. It's so endearing. It is so hilarious. There's so many great songs sprinkled throughout. The animation is lovely. The voice performances are fantastic. But Robin Williams as the genie is the true MVP. You talk about Aladdin, you can't talk about the movie without talking about the genie and the work that Robin Williams brings to the movie. There are lines that the genie says that may not necessarily be funny, but it's because of how Robin delivers those lines that you're on the floor just holding your chest from laughing so hard. The impressions that Robin brings to this character is absolutely insane. How he's able to go from one impersonation to another just like that so quickly, in a blink, in a rush. It's insane how fast he was able to go. And I always enjoyed watching videos of when they were making Aladdin, and then you would see footage of them in the recording booths and everything, and how all the actors that were also in the booths would just have to hold back their laughter. You would see the animators and the directors holding back their laughter and everything. I'm just like, I cannot even imagine being in the same room as him without guffawing. Like, that was the power of Robin Williams. I always just loved watching the videos where I don't remember his name. I'm just going to call him Steve from Full House. Whenever Steve from Full House would record his lines.
That's all I know him as.
When Steve from Full House would record his lines as Aladdin, and he would just like, he would have to like move his head away from the microphone and everything so that you wouldn't hear his laughter and everything. I cannot tell you my favorite impression that Robin does in this movie. As a kid, I mean, they were all really funny to me. But then as I got older and I started realizing who it was he was imitating, I'm like, yeah, that was very spot on. I mean, the Jack Nicholson one is probably my favorite one, because he just comes in. He has the sunglasses on, which automatically is like super spot on. And just him coming out of nowhere going, all right, Sparky, here's the deal. Who allowed that to be in a family Disney movie? I mean, God, they really it's such a shame that when you look back, or when you look ahead at where American animation has come, they just simply don't make movies like that anymore. Every once in a while, we get an animated film made here in the States that finds a way of catering towards everybody, and you could tell there's a lot of love and effort put into them. I mean, recently we had Spider-Verse. I thought that was a great film. Excellent. I mean, that wasn't necessarily a comedy per se, but it had a great emotional heft to it. It had stunning animation on top of that. And you and I were talking about the new Ninja Turtles movie, where that film had a lot of comedy into it, but it also found a way of catering towards everyone. I'm in my mid-20s, and I loved the TMNT movie. I thought it was great. I walked into that movie thinking it was just going to be for children. But me, as a guy in his mid-20s, I loved that movie. I walked out of it going, wow, that was great. I laughed so much during it. I loved the story, and I loved the characters, and I had a great time. And Aladdin is just like that. It makes me laugh. It makes me moved. I love all the songs. I mean, I can't think of a song that I don't like in the movie. Everything is great. Flies by, not an ounce of fat is to be found. Every single performer here knocks it out of the park. I mean, we already talked about Robin, but I have to give a major, 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 major shout out to Gilbert Gottfried as Iago.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, God, one of the greatest sidekicks on screen. Like, seriously, what a class act. Now, in my opinion, if I were in the recording booth with him, I would probably fall on the floor. I wouldn't be able
to
get up.
Could you imagine Gilbert Gottfried and Robin Williams in the same, just in the same area for the same recording booth?
I don't even want to imagine it.
I bet you there's some lost tapes out there, and I want them released because I want to hear that conversation. Because I guarantee you it's one of the funniest conversations ever.
Just his it's just so good. Just like him going, I can't take it anymore. If I gotta choke down on one more of those crackers.
You do a very good Gilbert Gottfried impression. I do have to compliment you on this.
That's not the only time we've talked about Gilbert Gottfried tonight.
This is the second time tonight we've talked about him.
And we compared Gilbert Gottfried's voice to a friend of the show. I'm not going to say the friend's name, Ethan Simi. But, you know, no, Aladdin really is wonderful. It's so good. And Robin as the genie is unbelievable. And when he passed away, I just kept thinking of the goodbye scene between him and Aladdin, where he's just like, no matter what people say, you're always a prince to me. And I'm like, God fucking damn it. And now every time I watch the movie, that line hits me way harder than it did when I was a kid. Because when I was a kid, I was like, all right, bye. And then as an adult, I'm like, no.
Oh, that's nice.
No, come back.
Yeah.
I'm like, come back. But God, Aladdin is great. This definitely has to be on your list. And if it's not on your list, that's going to be the biggest shock that this podcast has ever encountered.
It's a pass for me, and it's a very hard pass because, man, am I ready to talk some Disney Renaissance, man? I'm just like gearing up.
Let me talk about it.
But I can't yet because I got to talk about my number three.
And what is your number three?
And this is, once again, a soul heart pick, okay? A nostalgia pick. And it's Night at the Museum because I am a history buff.
Yes.
And I love his Teddy Roosevelt so
yes.
much.
Yes.
Like, I love that film. I don't care what anyone says. We got a young Rami Malek. Also the second time we've talked about him tonight. But you got fucking Owen Wilson as a little Western dude. You got Ben Stiller at his finest. Man, like. But let me talk about Robin Williams' performance for a moment. Like, I refuse to believe that Teddy Roosevelt did not act like Robin Williams. Like, it's just so cemented in my mind because I feel like he just delivered. Not only does it look like the dude, he just delivered these juicy lines in the most stoic way possible. And you know, I think about that role. I think about him and it fills me with glee. And another thing I was thinking about when you were talking about with Aladdin and him saying goodbye in the second one, which I barely remember, it was in the Smithsonian. But the one thing I do remember is he had just passed. And
the third one, it was in the third one. The third
Night
at
the
Museum.
One?
Okay. Yeah, that came out right after he died.
Yes. And there's this line in there where he says, Teddy Roosevelt turns to Ben Stiller and says, you got to let me go. Like, and it just like wrecked me. Cause I remember watching that in the theater and I was just like, fuck, man. It's just one of those things that hits you. It's like, you got to let me go. And it just seems so almost like planned by the universe in a weird way. You know, it gave you goosebumps when you thought about it. But no, this series, and Robin Williams in it, the way he acted with the actors, the way he acted with the monkey, like he just brought, he made the movie for me. He I just love this role. I love it. I don't know what else to say about it. I am so curious. Please let this be on your list. But I also understand, because there's two other great films that I may have not seen that should be on this list.
So Night at the Museum is actually right outside my top five. I love these movies so much. I loved them as a kid. I was a huge history nut growing up. I have a bit of a personal attachment to history. My mom's a history teacher, so naturally, of course, like there's a lot of love for history in this household and everything. And I always just found the concept so cool of how a museum literally comes to life at night. And I was the perfect age, I think, when this series started. I was looking up as you were talking. The first one came out in December 2006, which is fucking nuts. It's nuts that these movies are almost 20 years old. I don't even want to comprehend any of that. Jeez. But I was 8 years old when the movie came out. I remember so well. Like, my parents took me and my sister to go see it. Opening night or opening weekend or whatever. I remember it came out around Christmas time, and it was just so cool, and it was so funny, and it was just so exciting, and there was all these cool comedic moments and the animals coming to life, and Dick Van Dyke was the villain. And at the time, I'm like, I don't give a fuck about Dick Van Dyke. Although at that time, I'm like, why does this guy look familiar? And then when I realized it was Bert from Mary Poppins, I was like,
someone's
holy
not a Disney
shit.
Historian, and it's showing right now, man. It is showing.
No.
I
now,
was
hold
excited
on,
for
hold
Dick
on.
Van Dyke. I was hold so now, you... fucking excited for Dick Van Dyke in the film. I was like, can you fucking believe it? Bert from Mary Poppins is in this. Hot damn. I was so excited.
Now hold your horses. Calm down over there. At the time, I wasn't as much of a Disney historian as I am now. So at the time, I was just like, oh, okay, Bert from... Well, first of all, I kept making the joke. I'm like, he's still alive? What the fuck? And he's still alive to this day, which is nuts.
He's still
kicking. Oh, he really
he's
is.
He's a new Betty White. He ain't going. He ain't going anytime
soon.
No,
he ain't leaving anytime soon. But yeah, I love that first film in particular. I really enjoyed the second one, and that third one as well. I thoroughly enjoyed. I rewatched these movies about like 2 years ago, and yeah, they hold up for me. All of them hold up for me. Are they flawed? Yes. Are they a bit predictable? Sure. But they're harmless family comedies that, to me, found a way of doing what I said before about Aladdin. It found a way of catering towards people of all ages. There's a lot of things for people to enjoy about these movies. And to talk specifically about Robin's portrayal of Teddy Roosevelt, he's incredible. I mean, first of all, I thought he looked exactly like him. The mustache really made him look exactly like the real Teddy Roosevelt. Second of all, he was a great mentor to Ben Stiller's character, Larry Daly. By the way, kick-ass name, Larry Daly, great name. And Ben Stiller, I mean, I'm a huge Ben Stiller fan, so I find him to be a very underrated talent that people really don't give enough credit to. He's a talented actor, but he's also proven himself to be a really fucking good director as well. Okay, I don't really talk about television on this podcast, but if anyone out there is not watching Severance, you need to change that right now, because that show is fucking fantastic. And mainly because of what he brings to that show behind the camera. It's so good. It's really impressive. You would not think that Ben Stiller, the comedic actor Ben Stiller, would direct a show like Severance, which is not a comedy at all. So love the range from him. But no, Robin as Teddy Roosevelt is extraordinary. And yeah, that goodbye in the third movie is so heartbreaking, even though obviously they shot that right before he died. Even if Robin was still alive, that scene would still like hit like a ton of bricks. But obviously, knowing that Robin is no longer with us, it hit even more. And just the whole sequence of how Larry's like, I have no idea what I'm gonna do tomorrow. Then Teddy's just like, how excited. It's just that smile. The thing that we love about, one of the main things that we loved about Robin was that smile. It was just so infectious. It's just hard to not smile when he smiles to the characters or to the audience. It's just like, God, he really was unlike anyone else. And yeah, that goodbye scene in the third Night at the Museum, it hurts me just thinking about it. And how that was 10 years ago. Like, He's just like, yeah. Smile, my boy, sunrise, and then that's it. And it's just like, God, like, it fucking hits you like a ton of bricks. But I love these movies so much. I love all three of them. And I really love how within minutes of when we're introduced to him in the first movie, Larry's just babbling about something. Then he just screams, stop babbling, boy! Just so oh, good. Man. It's dude. So good. Oh, my God. So it's just so good. The another really kick-ass pick. And, my number three is... It's time to talk about Mrs. Doubtfire. It's time to talk about this movie. Oh my God, I love it so much. I do like how you brought up how it's interesting how, considering what this movie was going for and how it was so respected and everything, I don't really know how people look at it now. I feel like people still love the movie. Of course, like, yeah, there's some things in the movie that maybe haven't aged well. I won't be the first to admit that, but Robin is so good playing both of these characters of Daniel and then Euphigenia Doubtfire. And God, the fact that I know that name by heart is insane. That just comes to show how much I love this movie. But I love how you brought up how he is a father who loves his kids more than anything in the world. And now he's in the middle of this custody battle. And how he may not be able to get custody of his kids. He's not trying to get full custody. He's trying to split it off and everything. But his wife, Miranda, played fantastically. Major shout out to Sally Field. So good in this movie. So good. Love her in this so much. He decides that the only way that he could see his kids, really, is by disguising himself as a nanny. And he grows as a person himself because of this. And it's a really lovely film. It's so fucking funny. I cannot tell you my favorite moment in the movie because there are too many to list. There's so many great lines to list and everything. So many great moments. Of course, when he throws the fruit at Pierce Brosnan, that was hysterical. It was a run by fruit and I'll get him, sir. Oh my God. Oh, so good. Again, he would say things that aren't necessarily funny, but just the delivery of it is just so good and everything. Yeah. I'm trying to like think of more lines and everything. It's just hard to pinpoint like the lines and everything. It's so good. There's a particular beat when they go to the restaurant in the climax of the movie for Miranda's birthday and everything. They're like, oh, smoking or not smoking? They're like, oh, not smoking. Then he just comes out of nowhere and just goes, smoking! He just screams from the top of his lungs. And it's just so great and everything. I love it so much. The physicality of the role, too, needs to be recognized because, like, the fact that he's wearing this big suit and he's wearing all this makeup and then is able to move around a lot and everything. I mean, the physical comedy that Robin brought to his performances as well is really extraordinary. I feel like people talk about how funny he is and how funny his line deliveries are and his mannerisms, but I feel like people don't really discuss the physical comedy that he would bring. He wasn't as active in physical comedy as, like, say, a Jim Carrey, for instance, but the times where Robin had to utilize physical comedy, I mean, he knocked it out of the park. And the movie is, it's so good. It's so funny. It's so entertaining. And I love the story of it being really a story about a father and his love for his children and the lengths that he would go to see his children. Now, someone asked me not too long ago, how would I feel if my dad dressed up in drag just to see me? I don't know. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be able to say, you don't like wearing that stuff, do you, Dad? She's a he. She's a he. She. She's a he. Oh, man. But no, I love the movie. It's great. So many great moments. Such a great performance, a Golden Globe winning performance. In fact, he won an award for this. Honestly, he should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. Every once in a while, they nominate comedic performances. This was a performance that honestly should have been recognized because the places that he went, like, it was an extraordinary performance. The fact that he was able to do everything that he did in this is wonderful and shouldn't be ignored. And the last thing I'll say before we transition into our number two, like I said a few minutes ago, Sally Field deserves a shout out because she is really, really great. And that freak out scene at the restaurant is so great. Just how she denies that, you know, he was Mrs. Doubtfire the whole time. How she just subtly goes, the whole time, the whole time, the whole time. She just freaking out and everything. It's so good. And also Pierce Brosnan, God, looking as handsome as ever. Good God.
Oh, yeah. That man like, ages like a fine glass of wine, my friend.
He really has. And I just recently rewatched the Mamma Mia movies. Mm-mm-mm.
Oh, that's the perfect Silver Fox moment.
Even though he can't sing, that's totally fine.
It's fine. It was only SOS. Like, I didn't really need range from him. I just needed a little silver moment.
Although the places that he went, the lengths he went to when he was at the bottom of the mountain, just screamed Donna from the top of his lungs. That was that was cinema right there.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. All right. Number two, I get to talk about Latin now. Yay. But I have to start with the Disney Renaissance because you peaked a very Roman Empire moment for me. The Disney Renaissance, man. I mean, I hate to sound ageist, but they don't make them like they used to, okay?
They really don't. Like, they really don't.
Literally.
No, you're not wrong. What was the last really good Disney animated film? Actually, no. What was the last great Disney animated film?
Exactly. Like, we had that resurgence, right, with Tangled, Frozen, Moana. Wreck-It Ralph. Those were good. But I would say animation's changing right now, but it's in a very harsh transition because it doesn't know what it wants to do yet. And I think with Spider-Verse and the graphic and the artistic direction of it, I see animation going in that direction. We see it in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. Just really adding these layers and layers onto the animation so it's not just like, you know, a clear looking, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but animation's getting cooler in how they approach the design of the film, which I think is really cool. But going to the resurgence, what a lot of people just don't realize is like Disney came out of such a dark, dark period after Walt died. His brother took over for a little bit. Then shortly after Disney World opened, he passed away, which Ron Miller took over. And Ron Miller is Diane Disney's husband. So he took over the company and basically kind of screwed it up. Like, there's no other way to say it. He just did not make good decisions, you know, through, I think, Touchstone Pictures was a little bit of a hit of a miss. And just like the animation studio did not get the support that it needed. And they did a lot of swing and misses in the 70s and 80s. Like things like, you know, that aren't as well known, which I still think are good films. They're just not at the potential that they have of like the Underground Rescuers. Is it All Dogs Go to Heaven or is it Oliver and Company? It's Oliver and Company. I always get those two confused. But things like that, these films that really didn't hit. It didn't have the spark that it had when Walt and his brother were in place. But whenever Eisner came on the scene, man, and Little Mermaid came out, it saved the Disney empire for sure. Like Michael Eisner, I know he screwed up a lot of things, but that man saved a lot of things. But you're not here to hear me talk about 30 minutes about Disney history, which I very much could. Let's talk about this film because I think it sets up for how amazing of a film this was. Aladdin was such, in my book, a little bit more of a risk because, you know, they had just came out with Little Mermaid. They had just came out with Beauty and the Beast, nominated for Best Picture, which never happened up to that point. An animated film had never been nominated for Best Picture. And then we get to Aladdin. And Aladdin is kind of the return to that slapstick style, but it's with Robin Williams in it. That is why that film, in my opinion, is successful. I think it would have been a good film, but if if Robin Williams wasn't there, it'd be a miss. I mean, it would still be good, but it wouldn't be as memorable. And I think that's the power of an actor. I don't know if this is true, but supposedly for You Ain't Never Had a Friend Like Me, they basically just said go and they animated around it. I don't know if that's true or not, but I could see it either way, because there's not many actors you can do that to where you just say, go for it. Just do whatever and hit it with such velocity and such charisma and nail it on the head like that. He, in this film, oh man, he just really, I mean, he stole the show, yes. Gilbert Gottfried also did so good in it. But he really put that movie on the map to where it is today. That in A Whole New World. So those are my thoughts. I could go on, but I'm not going to, because I saw I lost Brian about 30 seconds into my Disney historian. I said, well, fuck it. I'm still going in. So I'm still going in. It don't matter whether you're here or not.
I never thought I would quote Maestro, but to quote Maestro, I'm reining it in. That's literally you right now. That's literally you right now.
You don't say my trigger words, man. You don't say my trigger words without a good 15-minute lecture.
Well, let me pose a few questions to you about this. What is your favorite Genie line?
I think it's the one where I gotta look it up. This is now bothering me. I mean, it's really not Genie line as much as it's like a... I hate that you did this to me, because I should know this, and of course I'm blanking. But the thing that's sticking out to me, and it's just the stupidest one, it's not even the best one, was whenever Aladdin is arriving and they're acting like they're part of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And he says, wonderful feathers. I don't know why that's the one sticking out to me. Because that's not the answer. That's not the answer.
I just love the energy so much. Just him screaming, Prince Ali, fabulous. Hey, Ali, Ababa. it's so good. And one other moment is when they leave the Cave of Wonders and they're arriving. Then he like just acts like Taurus and everything. Thank you for choosing magic carpet. Please exit when we go to a complete stop. Thank you. Goodbye. Goodbye now. Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye.
I'm also partial to the scene whenever he's like, come on, ask me something. Ask me something. And he's like, I wish for this. He's like, no. And he just like starts packing up for Disney World. I just love that scene.
Yeah. And he's wearing the Goofy hat.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just too good. It's too good. Man, you know, I want to say one thing before I go into my number two. So you being a Disney fan, I hope that you played these phenomenal games when they came out. The Kingdom Hearts games. I really hope that you were a Kingdom Hearts person. Please tell me you were.
First off, I've played Kingdom Hearts 3. But I've also been told
which
that
it's just
not
turned
Kingdom
5 years
Hearts,
old today.
Which is what... I know. And I tried to play that game so hard, like Kingdom Hearts 3, and it literally just like, I kept falling asleep in it and I feel bad. But like, I really like Kingdom Hearts 3. It's pretty boring.
But Kingdom Hearts 2 is the best one of the Kingdom Hearts series.
Have I played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2? I did not, because it wasn't... The anime wasn't really part of, even though it was Disney, wasn't really a part of my experience growing up. Now, if you have asked me about 102 Dalmatians on CD-ROM or Bug's Life on CD-ROM, man, I'm ready to preach the gospel. Okay, I'm ready to preach the gospel on those two. I still think about 102 Dalmatians to this day. I still think about those levels. Okay, but Kingdom Hearts just was not in my purview. Epic Mickey, also a shout out to that game, because Oscar the Rabbit came back, and Oscar the Rabbit is also getting his own little series right now, which makes me really happy.
Yeah, that Epic Mickey was a pretty cool concept. I remember getting that game and playing that when it came out. But Kingdom Hearts, I mean, God, I could go on. You talk about how Disney Renaissance is like a trigger word for you. Kingdom Hearts is like a very important bread and butter to me. I don't like anime at all. I really don't give a crap about anime. But growing up, obviously, yeah. I loved Disney. And then just knowing the idea of where you get to play as this character who teams up with Donald and Goofy and goes on adventures across all these different Disney worlds. I'm like, this is the coolest fucking thing ever. And the fact that series is still going 20 years later is insane to me, although they need to just release Kingdom Hearts 4 already because I am tired and tired of waiting. I waited 13 fucking years for Kingdom Hearts 3. I waited for most of my life for Kingdom Hearts 3. Kingdom Hearts 2, not to get it, this will be very quick, and then we'll talk about my number 2. Kingdom Hearts 2 came out in 2006 when I was 8. Kingdom Hearts 3 came out in 2019 when I was 21 years old. I was in college when Kingdom Hearts 3 came out. I was in fucking elementary school when Kingdom Hearts 2 came out.
It's like waiting for BioShock 4, man.
Most of my life, I went through more than half of my life when Kingdom Hearts 3 came out.
And they just expect you to be waiting for them. Unbelievable.
And I did wait. I waited for 13 years of my life for that game, and that game left me feeling very conflicted. You know how everyone was conflicted about The Last Jedi when it came out?
Yeah.
That's how I was with Kingdom Hearts 3.
I was
very conflicted, and I still am conflicted about it to this day. There's a lot of things that I love, but there's a lot of things that I hate.
Yeah. Leah, who is the co-host of She Will Rock You, my other podcast, it's on a hiatus right now, but I remember when it came out, and she had been waiting because she's a huge fan of Kingdom Hearts. And when it finally came out, she was so sad. Like, she was so pissed off. So I started playing it, and I kept falling asleep at like on the dot 8:30 p.m. because I would play it, and there would be so much dialogue, I'd start falling asleep.
There was way more dialogue.
Like this is also a moment of highlighting Dreamlight Valley, which I have put 250 hours into, and I'm saying that as a 30-year-old adult, and I'm not afraid to say that. Like, that game fucking slaps. It is Animal Crossing with Disney characters. I haven't played it in a bit. I'm on some new shit right now, but shout out to that game. That was a good fucking game.
I love how we got into a bit of a game chat. I'm not much of a gamer, but I do appreciate how we got into this little game chat. But what I was going at with Kingdom Hearts was that, so Aladdin is in the first two Kingdom Hearts games. Agrabah is a playable area, and it's so much fun, especially in the second game. It's so good. Now, the genie is obviously in the games, but I think at this point, I don't know if Disney had, because I know Disney and Robin Williams had a bit of an off relationship for a while. There was a period where Robin didn't want to work with Disney, or Disney didn't want to work with him. I don't know which way it was, but they had the guy who voices Homer Simpson come in and voice the genie. And tell it's the guy who voices Homer Simpson because it sounds like Homer Simpson. But you could hear a little bit of like Robin Williams-isms in it. It was actually really, really fun. But if anyone out there is a Disney fan and has not played Kingdom Hearts, you definitely should do that. It's not too late to get into them. You don't have to be a kid to like Kingdom Hearts. You could be an adult. I'm an adult, and I still love Kingdom Hearts. I don't love it as much as I did when I was younger, but I'm happy that we live in a time where something that I loved as a kid is still going on. And I just wanted to bring that up because like when you said that you were such an avid Disney person, I'm like, she has to have played Kingdom Hearts. But of course, she played the most recent one, which was kind of a dud.
The third one. I have played the third one. I think it's because I keep waiting for them to restore the first and second one. I think and I played, what was the other, like that middle one? It was like 2 3/4 or something like that. I played that on DS.
No, 358 days over two.
That's what it is. I played that a little bit. I just keep waiting for them to restore it because I feel like they're going to do it. You know, like what they're doing with GoldenEye 64 right now, that they completely
I think it's available.
Banjo. They did that with Banjo.
Recently. Yeah, I mean, they did remaster all those Kingdom Hearts games. They're available like on the PS4, the Xbox One. I think they're available on PC now as well. But definitely play on a console. Don't play on a
I'm adding it to my list.
A computer. It's so good. It's so good. Wow, a Kingdom Hearts talk. Did not think we were going to talk about this here on the podcast. But hey, any opportunity to talk about Kingdom Hearts is a win for me. So now going into my number two. I knew that I had to put this film on my list because if you were going to ask me what I think his best performance of his career is, I think universally a lot of people will say it's this film, and I love it to pieces. The only reason why it's not my number one is that it doesn't stick with me as much as my number one, and that is Good Will Hunting, and we'll talk about it, where you stand on it after I say my piece. The audience is just going to love to hear what you have to say about it. So
you just send me up for success, dude.
I cannot wait to hear. I cannot wait for our audience to hear what you have to say. So Good Will Hunting. You say about this that hasn't been said already? It's so, so impressive how Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were pretty much nobodies at this point. And then they wrote the screenplay. And then they got someone like Gus Van Sant, who had been directing films for quite a long time. A few years, in fact. I mean, he did My Own Private Idaho and a few other films. To Die For, he did at that point as well. And they both decided to star in it. And then they got freaking Robin Williams to be in it as well. And, you know, it's a really great underdog story in a sense. But it's also a great story of failing to see your potential and where you belong in this world, whether it's with your career or with your friends or with significant others, family, what have you. And I have to shout out Matt Damon because this is the Matt Damon show. I mean, he's the star of the movie. He plays the titular role, and he also co-wrote the screenplay, and he won an Oscar. He and Ben Affleck won an Oscar for writing this script, and they were both in their mid-20s, and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? I'm around the age they were when they won Oscars. What the hell am I doing with my life? It just makes me sad, but it's so cool that both of them won Oscars for this. I think it's really, really dope and everything, but I really adore the back and forth between Matt Damon and Robin Williams here, and I really love how Robin Williams isn't just this therapist character too well. He kind of becomes a bit of a father figure to him, which I really appreciate. And you also learned that his character, Sean, is going through stuff as well. He recently lost his wife. He's still grieving over the loss of her and everything. And he's also broken, just like the character of Will is. And there are so many sequences that everybody talks about from this movie, especially when it comes to Robin's acting. The It's Not Your Fault sequence is absolutely devastating. Ever since I saw the movie for the first time, I mean, that scene really hit like a ton of bricks. And I remember when Robin passed away, that scene was all over the internet, all over Facebook, Twitter, what have you. That was like the scene that a lot of people were posting whenever they we're just talking about their favorite Robin Williams scenes, performances, moments, what have you. And the fact that he won an Oscar for it as well is so cool. Obviously, this was the only Oscar that Robin won, but it was also a very deserved win. And I will always love his speech. I will always love about how, you know, he runs on stage all goofy and everything, and how he's like, I won this? Pfft, no way. I just love how Robin's like subtly just like being all bashful and denying that. He's like, huh, I want an Oscar? Pfft, please. Over these Oscar caliber people? Huh, give me a break. But it's such a deserving win. It's a great performance. It's a beautiful performance. And if the banter between him and Matt Damon didn't work, the entire movie would not have worked. I really do love the chemistry between the two of them, and I really do love the movie as well. There's a lot of moments that make me laugh. There's a lot of moments that make me move. There's a lot of heartbreaking moments. The relationship between Matt Damon and Minnie Driver's characters, it's the emotional crux of the entire movie. And without spoiling it for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, let's just say that the turns that it goes towards are really difficult to watch, in the sense where it feels so real. It feels so authentic. And I feel like there was a part of Matt Damon, and I guess to an extent Ben Affleck, where they brought certain elements to these characters. I mean, I'm sure Matt Damon really like went deep and thought of how this character could feel as real as possible. And
yeah,
again, it's so beautiful what he was able to pull off, both with his screenplay and with the performance that he brings to screen. I love the film. I also love a good Boston film. I love over-the-top Boston accents. Robin doesn't really have that in this movie. No, but whenever whenever it subtly sneaks in, I really do love it. And that bench scene, oh my God, so iconic. It's so wonderful. And this is also another example of where you're like, this guy had the hairiest fucking arms I've ever seen in my life. There's a sequence where he literally chokes Will, and you're like, and also he was a pretty jacked dude.
Look at that.
He was also a pretty jacked dude. He was pretty fit.
Yeah.
Robert Williams. Damn. Like, it's, you don't want to fuck with him, especially in that movie. Like, he absolutely hides it well. But yeah, love the movie, love Good Will Hunting, love the performance. It's an incredible achievement in Robin's filmography. It's so awesome that he won an Academy Award for it. Yeah, I love this movie so much. It's so wonderful. And yeah, I know it would be shocking to some people that it wasn't my number one. But when I get to why my number one is my number one, I'll be able to explain it properly. So Good Will Hunting. Tell the listeners your thoughts on Good Will Hunting.
Could not agree with you more. I think you've said it all. The reason I am stalling is because I have never seen the movie in its entirety. And let me explain something. When I say in its entirety, I have seen the bench scene, and I saw it 30 minutes before filming this. Because I said, if I got to know something to talk about, I'm going to at least see the most famous scene. And I agree with you when you said his accent kind of sneaks in. It sneaks in when he says Boston. Like, I heard it. I'm also a fan of a Boston accented film. Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner in The Town Man. Ooh, there are some good ass Boston accents going on there.
What about the cherry on top? Tom Hanks to Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, that. Let's talk about Catch Me If We Can, because Catch Me If You Can, because we haven't gotten on enough topic tangents today.
The best movie of all time.
Film. Easily a top 20. Easily. I saw it the other day. I still love that film. But you can go listen to a podcast where Brian and I actually met, and we did a collaborative draft of Steven Spielberg films on 24 minutes of A24. It was pure chaos. But yes, I have not seen it. I also have not seen Dead Poets Society, so I'm going to go ahead and get that out now as well. But I've seen clips of it, and I feel embarrassed saying that because it is on my list. There are certain movies that are on my list. I just haven't gotten to it yet. And that's because new shit keeps coming out, but that's not an excuse. I will say this. Anything Robin Williams touches is amazing. There's nothing the man can't do.
Oh my God.
You don't have to. You don't have to answer that.
Oh my God. Okay. I have no idea where you're going to go for your number one now. I mean, I kind of have an idea. I think I have an idea.
You have
an
idea.
But I don't want to guess. I don't want to guess because I know I'm going to get it wrong, but I also feel like I'm going to be right. So, okay, you haven't seen Good Will Hunting. You need to finish that, like, as soon as you get off this call. You need to finish it, like, immediately.
I will add it to my – you know, I don't think Josh has done that on his letterbox yet, so it will give us, you know, add it to the list of the three movies.
Yes, please. Absolutely.
That we watch in one day.
Exactly. So, tell the listeners what your favorite Robin Williams film of all time is.
So, this is actually a recent one for me. Like I said, I'm getting there. I'm going through the catalogs of people. And I recently saw this while I was on a plane ride. And when I tell you, I could not hold back my laughter. It was so hard for me not to just start dying laughing loud. I'm talking about a loud, callous, crow-like laugh, okay? When it comes out, and it was so hard to hold it in. And that, oddly enough, was the Birdcage. And this became my number one.
I figured, I knew, I am obsessed
with this film lately. And I think it's because we see a side of Robin, another side of Robin Williams that we don't really get to see that much. And by him playing a gay character who has a son who's going to be getting married to a conservative, the daughter of a conservative senator, he has just found ways to deliver lines. He is the straight man to Nathan Lane's drag queen persona that's all over the place. And for him to play a straight man, we don't get to see that. That's pun intended, of course. We don't get to see that as much when he did comedy, to play that straight man character, the Abbott to the Costello. And I just love this performance. There's so many good lines that he delivers. He plays this perfect, like, old, like, this couple's been married for a long time and they're just tired of each other's shit. Those are like my favorite characters ever when I see them in media. And he just plays it to a T. And he also has a great improv line in it where it's just fuck your shrimp. And it's a great fucking line. It landed. And it was just like he slipped on the fucking floor during that scene. And what's his name who plays the housemaid? I can't think of his name right now. But he's holding the shrimp in his hand. And he's like, fuck your shrimp. I know that makes no sense to anyone who hasn't seen it. You go see it, you'll understand. But he improv that whole, that fall that he accidentally did into the script. And it kept it in because it was just so perfect. It added this great element to it. And I also, you know, I've been thinking about this film as well, like from a like LGBTQ plus perspective. And it's just, once again, it goes back to Robin Williams bringing things to the table and everyone just like, okay, because he brings people into the experience. And even though he doesn't have a lived experience as a gay man that we know of, you know, he really treated that role with such tender, loving care. And we've seen roles in the past where straight men play gay characters, and it just feels like it's just not fully there. At least there's been a couple times I've seen them, and this just doesn't feel like it's fully there. It's not fully encapsulated because they're missing that perspective. I don't feel that with Robin Williams in this film. And I think he really did his research, but I also think he has such a perceptive heart for people that it really shines through. There's a scene in there where he owns the club that Nathan Lane performs at, the drag bar that he performs at. And he signs away half of it to him. And, you know, they had just had this big, funny blowout fight. And he goes and finds Nathan Lane, who's saying he's running away. And he just signs it over. And they're just holding each other's hand and just sitting there. And it's just this beautiful, like, human-to-human moment that, I don't know, it still reaches out to me. And I think that's why this film's at the number one for me, because you really see who Robin Williams is in that film. And he's once again playing a character that he doesn't have a shared perspective in or, you know, experience in, but he brings such a humanity to it. And I think that's just such a gift to be able to do that I don't think a lot of people can do. And it's got to be, and I feel like it's only people who have an open heart to be able to do that. And I think that's why it's like films like this that I just realize what an amazing person on this earth we had in Robin Williams. So that's my number one.
It's a great number one. And like you said, it definitely shows why we loved Robin so much. It has literally everything that you want in him in one movie. And God, this was a movie that I discovered during COVID. I remember during the lockdown, I was watching a lot of these movies that I hadn't seen for the first time. And this was one that I had wanted to see for so long because I heard how funny it was. And I'm not going to lie, I did not anticipate laughing and loving it as much as I did. And as great as Robin is in the movie, and he is great in the movie, Nathan Lane gives one of the great on-screen comedic performances that I have maybe ever seen. And anytime Nathan Lane's in really anything, he always knocks it out of the park. He is so friggin' funny. The energy from him, the loud screams, all the random lines, when he tries to drive the car, when he tries to put butter on the toast, and he's like, oh, I pierced the toast!
And you pierce the toast.
It's so good. There's so many lines with him where, again, they may not necessarily be funny, but it's just so good. Armand Goldman, you old so-and-so. How about them dolphins?
Also on Nathan Lane, like you were saying, that was his breakout role. Like before he was on Broadway. And
he was Timon.
Find him at... Yeah, he was Timon like shortly after that film. And, you know, I think that also in a weird way, you know, he had such a respect for Nathan Lane. Robin Williams did. We were talking a little bit about it. Nathan Lane was almost outed on a TV show, and Robin Williams saw it coming, knew that Nathan was gay. It wasn't disclosed yet. And he distracted that question from coming out, like to protect Nathan Lane. But with the film, like, Robin Williams, you would think he would be the one to steal the show, but Nathan did. And I feel like Robin recognized that and let him be that character. And I think that also, once again, speaks to a great actor who realizes, this is my role. I see your role. I see where you can go with it, and making that space and making that room. You know, not everyone can do that in Hollywood, especially when it's all about, look at me, look at me. Robin didn't feel the need. I would say based off of those kind of facts, it seems like he just didn't need to do that.
Exactly. It's a great film. And my number one, you did hint at it. You did give it away, but that's okay.
Sorry.
This is not the first time that I've talked. It's totally fine. This is not the first time that I've talked about this film on the podcast, but my favorite film starring Robin Williams is Dead Poets Society. There's so many reasons why I love this movie, and I'll just start off with those before I really get into why this movie means the world to me. And I've talked about it many times on this podcast, but, you know, I just have to, like, just address it any chance that I get. So, I'm a huge coming-of-age film fan. That's my favorite genre. So naturally, anytime a coming-of-age film is bestowed upon me, I will absolutely watch it. And this is one of the finest in the entire genre, in my opinion. I mean, it perfectly captures young adolescence so beautifully. And I love all the young actors' performances. I love how a lot of these actors made their debut in this movie. Even though he had done stuff prior to this, Ethan Hawke, this is pretty much where Ethan Hawke really got his notoriety. And then later on, he did some films throughout the 90s until right before he really, I think, made international fame by being in the Before trilogy. Robert Sean Leonard, Josh Charles, a handful of young actors who ended up becoming pretty successful as they got older. And Robin Williams plays the professor, John Keane is his name, and he's very much someone that wants to teach the students his own ways of discovering themselves and who they are and where they're meant to be and what they love and how they shouldn't always go by the rules and how they should follow their hearts and see who they feel they are. And it's a really beautiful, beautiful film, and Robin's performance is incredible. He's fantastic in this. This was his second Oscar nomination right after Good Morning Vietnam. But this was really the first time where I think Robin did a pretty straight up drama. There's some comedy sprinkled throughout this movie, but it's a pretty laid back performance from him. He incorporates some of his comedic mannerisms into this performance, but for the most part, you get a side of him that's very, very serious. And I really like that element of this movie. I love how it's a cozy, film that's set throughout the season. I love movies that are very atmospheric when it comes to the time period and the seasons and everything. There's a lot of beautiful imagery regarding the fall. There's some beautiful imagery regarding the winter here. A recent film that came out, The Holdovers, gave me a little bit of elements of this film to where it captures the time period really well. It's set primarily at school, at a boarding school, and I think it nails it wonderfully. I think it's a wonderful film. Pierre Weir directed it. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. This won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, and I know that that year was a pretty competitive year. Do the Right Thing was one of the films that was up for screenplay, and I mean, if that won the award, that would have been a very deserving win as well. But
that's a good one.
Regarding why this is my number one of Robin Williams' filmography, now I could safely say that this isn't the best film of his filmography, but the reason why it sticks to me so much is because when I saw this film 10 years ago, crazily enough, right before Robin passed away, you know, there's a prevalent theme here in this movie about how you shouldn't let people put you down for loving what you love and what brings the most joy out of you. Back in the day, like, there were people that would laugh at me for loving movies and obsessing about them the way that I do, which I think is ridiculous. Like, everyone's allowed to love whatever they love and what they're allowed to be passionate about, what they're passionate about. That's just how it is. And there was a point in my life where I'm like, maybe I'm not good at what I do and what I'm meant to do and what have you. And then I saw this movie and it was a wake-up call for me to where I cannot allow people to put me down for loving what I love, and I can't let them get to me. I got to follow my own path and do what I love to do. And if that's what brings the best out of me, then I gotta keep going and doing that. I've always loved talking about movies. I've always loved watching them. And, you know, movies are just a great escape for me. I mean, really any form of art is. Movies, TV, music, theater, books, video games, what have you. And even though film isn't really an element of this movie, you know, the arts definitely plays a pivotal part of this movie without giving anything away for anyone else to see it. But it's an over 30-year-old movie, and come on, if you haven't watched it, I mean, that's on you. But I know we can't get around to watching everything, but yeah, this movie really
you know, that went right over my head for a second. I was like, huh, who's he talking to? Like, and then it just hit. I was like, oh, never mind. Continue.
But this movie really left a much bigger impact on me than I ever could have imagined. It's a really beautiful and moving film, and tender and honest, heartfelt, heartbreaking. It's a very tragic film as well. There's a lot of emotions that go throughout this movie, and it's one of my favorites of all time. And that ending, top 10 endings of all time for me. This movie's not even in my top 10 of all time, but that ending is in the top 10 of all time. I brought up before of how there was a lot of clips played from like Good Will Hunting and Aladdin when Robin Williams passed away. That final scene of Dead Poets Society, that was the scene that was playing. The scene that was everywhere. Everywhere. The "Oh, Captain, my Captain," everyone standing on the desks and everything. Oh my God. I mean, not only were we saying goodbye to that character, we were saying goodbye to the film itself. And we also kind of felt like we were saying goodbye to Robin. And yeah, just watching that clip in the period of when we lost him is just insane. And it is still crazy to me that I watched this literally weeks before he passed away. Weeks. Mm. Like, obviously, I didn't know that that was going to happen, but it's just such a strange coincidence and everything. And yeah, I mean, I really owe a lot to this film. I mean, I watched it at a certain point in my life to where I needed a film like this. I needed this film at that point in my life, and I'm really thankful that I got to watch it when I did, because I don't know where I would be if I didn't watch this film. This isn't the film that made me, that kickstarted my love of film, but it's a film that left a much bigger impact on me than really maybe any other film that I've ever seen. Because it came out, I watched it at the perfect time, and it kind of saved my life in a way. And I'm so, so blessed for that. So hopefully you do end up watching Dead Poets Society, and hopefully you love it just as much as I do.
You know, even though I don't have too much to contribute to the movie itself, just listening to you talk about it with the passion of it, I think that's the beautiful thing about movies, in that movies can and have the power to make impressionable impacts on our life. And it's like moments like that where you watch this one film and you know you're just watching it, and it's like, this scene was made for me right here and right now. It's like the universe has a way of bringing these things into our life when we need to hear it. And movies are just a perfect delivery item for the universe, I feel like, sometimes.
I agree. Movies, just some movies leave certain impacts on us that we don't anticipate. And this is unlike anything I've ever seen when it comes to impacting me. Again, it's not the best movie I've ever seen, and it's not the best film from Robin Williams, but it's my favorite for that reason alone, is that it really just left an impact on me. But I also do genuinely believe that the movie is unbelievably good. And, you know, if you're a fan of coming of age films, and you're a fan of films set in the 50s, and you're a fan of the actors involved and the director involved, it's definitely a must watch. And people ask me all the time, do I prefer this film or The Truman Show? I can't answer that question, because they're both two of my favorites of all time. And I think The Truman Show is the better movie, but I've seen this one more, so I would have to say that I prefer this one over that one. But yeah, Dead Poets Society is incredible. It's fantastic. And there are so many films that we didn't get a chance to talk about today, and we're going to mention some of those in our honorable mentions. But before we do that, we're going to recap our list from 5 to 1. So, Beth Ann, what is your list?
My list is Hook. Oh, and I just closed it down. Okay. It's Hook, Mrs. Doubtfire, Night at the Museum, Aladdin, and number one is The Birdcage.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is 1 Hour Photo. Number 4 is Aladdin. Number 3, Mrs. Doubtfire. Number 2, Good Will Hunting. And number 1, of course, Dead Poets Society. So that was it with our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So what are some films that you want to give a shout out to that didn't make your top 5 list?
Damn, I should have saved Flubber for this. Fuck, that's okay.
You could talk about Flubber.
Flubber. No, I mean, I've said what I said my piece on it. It's a great fucking film. At least I think so, but it's only been since I was maybe like 6 years old since I've seen it. So I can't say that for certainty, whether it's a great
Maybe you gotta boot up Disney Plus right after this and watch it.
I have been tempted to. There have been times where I've seen it oddly pop up in my suggestions. I'm like, is it a Flubber day or not? But no, that's an honorable mention. Jumanji, I wish it was between that and Hook for me. And I went with Hook because I think that's the more impactful role. But Jumanji is still an absolute classic. Good Morning Vietnam's a good one. And let's make sure I'm not forgetting anything. That's what I'm going to say. Those are my honorable mentions.
Okay. For me, in terms of the honorable mentions, I mean, the Night at the Museum films, all three of them are honorable mentions. Hook is an honorable mention. Good Morning Vietnam, of course, is an honorable mention. The Birdcage, of course, is an honorable mention. I think The Fisher King is honestly in contention for maybe the best acting he's ever done as well. That's a fantastic film. That's a really great film. The places he goes there are insane to describe. It's a heartbreaking performance, truly devastating performance. Insomnia, I think, is Christopher Nolan's most underrated film. And the pairing of him and Pacino, that's like a match made in heaven. That's a really awesome pairing. Like, the two of them together is really insane. Awakenings, I think, is another underrated Robin Williams film. That's with him and Robert De Niro. That's a really solid one. I'm going to say World's Greatest Dad is a much smaller film in Robin Williams' filmography. It's kind of crazy how it, certain elements of it kind of hit towards how we ended up losing Robin Williams. It's kind of scary how that movie came out just a few years before we lost him. And then I will mention a very obscure pick. You know, you brought up Flubber and how, you know, you loved watching that when you were younger. This movie is really bad. I'll admit it. It's really terrible, but he's so fun to watch in it. I'm going to go with RV. I loved that movie when I was a kid.
Dude.
Loved that movie when I was younger. And you know what? We're in the middle of a Josh Hutcherson renaissance, so I feel like it's perfect to kind of bring this movie up right now. So, yeah, that movie is, it's ridiculous, but it's so fun.
No,
it's so
love for Fern Gully or Happy Feet? Man.
Okay, Fern Gully, I forgot that he was in that. Fern Gully, I have not seen since I was a kid, so I cannot say if I love that movie or if I hate it. Happy Feet terrifies the fucking shit out of me. It makes me feel so weirded out. I don't know why. I think it's because of the idea of dancing penguins and everything, dancing to random songs. I'm like, all right, what are we doing? What the hell are we doing?
So that's your phobia. Dancing penguins is oddly your phobia. Is what I've just heard in that sense.
I mean, look, there is some positivity towards it because Elijah Wood plays the main penguin, and that's, you know, that's a win in my book. Frodo as a penguin. I mean, what more can you want? Yeah, but his name isn't Happy Feet.
Happy Feet. One last one I forgot to include is August Rush.
I haven't seen that in so long. I remember when I saw the trailer for that as a kid, I was like, oh, Freddie Highmore. And then I saw Robin Williams and he had
like a Bono character.
Yeah, he looked like Bono. I'm like, what are we doing?
I haven't seen that movie in forever.
Freddie Highmore, wow, what an actor.
It's been a while since I've seen that, but I remember like he played like a. Remember that lady, the lady with the pigeons from Home Alone 2, and she like lived in an orchestra thing. It gives me that vibes. It's that more expounded upon.
Yeah, I could see the resemblance. I could see the resemblance and similarities between those two characters. I definitely could see that. And then the last question that I want to pose before we close out the episode is that obviously we have no idea the directions that Robin's career would have gone if he was still here, but who is a director or who are some directors that you would have liked to have seen him work with that he never got to work with, say directors that were obviously popular when he was alive or some emergent directors that have come in the last 10 plus years?
I think it would have been really cool to see him paired up with Damien Chazelle. Like, do, like, a kind of fast-paced La La Land kind of thing. Because I think because Robin Williams is naturally a fast-paced person, his mind's always going, I think it would pair really well with Damien Chazelle. Because he also is a very fast-paced, mind's always going kind of person. And then... Yeah. Probably David Fincher, like explore a little bit more of the insomnia type character. I think that would pair really well. And then one last thing, Wes Anderson. He should, you know, he would have been in like the Asteroid City if he was still alive. You know what I mean?
He honestly could have played Tom Hanks's character in Asteroid City, but Tom Hanks was perfect in that role. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hanks can't do no wrong, but like characters like that, like I could totally see him in a Wes Anderson film. So those are the three I would
absolutely say. Wes Anderson for sure would be like a perfect, he would have been a perfect collaborator for Robin Williams. For me, I'm gonna say in terms to continue the thriller aspect, I think it would have been really badass if he got to work with the Safdies. I think that would have been really, really sick.
Yeah.
You know,
Uncut Gem style, man.
Yeah, Uncut Gem style for Robin Williams. That would have been really, really sick. I had to really think about it once. I mean, obviously, I would have loved to have seen him work with Scorsese. That would have been really, really cool.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think of, like, other, like, obscure picks. It would be remiss of me to not say PTA. It would be very remiss of me to not say PTA. If he was given, like, a punch drunk love type of performance, that would have been really, really cool for him. Or imagine Robin Williams' Phantom Thread. Can you imagine how sick that would have been?
Dude. Okay, like, I could legitimately
I'm not saying cast him in Phantom Thread because that's DDL's movie, but, like, something like that would have been so sick for Robin Williams.
But that kind of, like, dry thriller, you know, where the whole point was the mushrooms. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I could see that. I could definitely see that.
Yeah. And then the last director that I would pick... You know, we're talking about very quirky, oddball directors. I'm going to say Yorgos Lanthimos, because why not? I mean, he has a movie out right now that's up for Best Picture. I'm not saying that he would have been perfect in this role. Honestly, though, I'm not going to lie. I could have seen him be in something like Poor Things, where I'm not saying he would play this character, but playing something that's akin to Willem Dafoe's character in that. As, like, the father figure?
Okay, I thought you were going one direction. I'm like, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't ruin it for me. No, I can see a woman.
What direction did you think I was going to?
I thought you were going to say Mark Ruffalo. And I was like,
No. Maybe like 30 years ago, Robin Williams, but not, like, current Robin Williams.
No, William Dafoe, absolutely. Absolutely, I could see. I could see him pulling that oddball side of it. Like The Favorite. I could see him doing a historical fiction, well, kind of fiction piece with Yorgos. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's very disappointing that we couldn't see him collaborate with some of these filmmakers, but I'm so appreciative of all the work that we have gotten from him, that we were given from him. I still think about his passing. You know, there are days where I think about it and I just remind me, I'm like, oh man, he's not with us anymore. But I'm so thankful that we get to celebrate the work that he gave to us and that he pumped out over the nearly 40 years that he was in the business. And he will always go down as one of the great comedians. He will always go down as one of the great comic actors, but he will also go down as one of the greatest actors that we have ever been graced with. So what are your closing thoughts on Robin Williams?
I mean, I feel really good with how much we expounded on him on the podcast, and all I can do is sum it up. You know, I think overall he was a actor of range, but he brought so much heart to everything he did. And for me, you know, it's acting performance. It absolutely is. But it's always getting a glimpse of who the real person is behind it, that where that well, so to speak, is coming from. And for me, I see that so clearly in Ron Williams, the goodness, the openness that was in his heart. I know that's the most hippy-dippy-doo-dah thing you could say, but that's what speaks to me the most is who he was as a person and how he used that strength that he had to connect with people and how it came out in his acting. That for me, not everyone has that and can do what he did.
Absolutely. Beth Ann, thank you so much for coming on to the show to talk to me about Rob Williams. I really loved having this discussion with you. It was really, really a blast to get to talk to you today about one of the greats that we were ever given. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Let's do it again. Let's talk about someone alive.
Absolutely. we could absolutely
That black humor, my friend.
Well, you know what? Someone has to do it. And if it ain't me, it has to be the guest that does it. So So tell the listeners where they could find you online. Where could they find your work?
You can find me at Beth Ann Tarpley, B E T H A N N E T A R P L E Y. Find me on Twitter or Instagram. That's where I'm the most active. You can find She Will Rock You. That is my rock history podcast. It is on hiatus right now, but we have a plethora of rock history episodes and interviews with up and coming artists. That is at She Will Rock You. Podcast is where you can find it. I also run another podcast called Cinematic Symphony. That also is a little bit on a hiatus, but that format hopefully is going to be changing soon. And you can find that at Cinematic SYM Pod on Twitter.
And I will put links for all that in the description below. And you guys can follow me on all social platforms at Brian Stuffy. You guys can subscribe to the show on any podcast or platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite Robert Williams films. I'd be very curious to hear your guys' list. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I really appreciate it. Be on the lookout for more great content coming your way on the podcast. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.